Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Keith Wood, hello.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I am not sure when we last spoke on the radio, but the world was a very different place.
Yes, it's kind of it's gone incredibly surreal for the last number of weeks. So it's been it's pretty tough, I think.
How have you spent the last couple of days then? Are the Wood family all locked in, locked down?
Yeah, we're fairly locked in, locked down. We have, well, once the schools closed last week and it cancelled, I normally fly pretty much every week. I'm in the UK most weeks. I'm in the US maybe once a month, so I travel quite a lot. So all that's obviously gone. And we've gone for a routine. So because I fly, I suppose, so much, I use the line that they have, that the air hostesses say at the start, when if there's cabin pressure changes, put on your own mask first and then look after everybody else. So you have to look after yourself first. And so, like, we've taken a view of the world is crazy. Let's deal with what we can deal with at the moment. So it's, I have three teenage boys, so you have to give them an element of structure and discipline and fun and all those sort of things. So first day or two were a little bit of an adjustment, to say the least. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but we have a routine now. My eldest is doing his leaving cert, so he has to study every day. I have one guy in TY who wants to do absolutely nothing every day, and I have a younger guy as well who has to have some reports in over the next week. So yeah, they're doing a bit of study every day. I'm hoping the house and gardens will never look better, because they're working on it every day. They're learning new skills they never thought they'd have to learn, and I never thought I'd have to show them, because I'm pretty crap at all that stuff. But and we're exercising, so we've got a gym here, and we're every morning as a family. Myself, Nicola, and the three boys are in the gym every morning, which is kind of entertaining. I'm a little bit aggressive in my shouting in the morning, so they'll be strong at the end of it, that's for certain.
God, that actually sounds, you know, in so much as it can at the moment. Idyllic enough, again, at the moment, in the context. I presume there is a comfort in the routine.
There is comfort in the routine, and, you know, that's the kind of first part where we have to make certain that you look after yourself and you make certain that you're not a risk to anybody else. And so we're limiting what we do. So the boys have only been out of the house if they've gone down to do some kicking practice on the rugby field. That's been the only time that they've been out, and they're doing that their own. I've only been out if I'm getting some food and stuff like that. So the town of Kittaloo is as quiet could possibly be. You know, it's a huge impact on a small village.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because I know you're involved in businesses down there and have a good feel for how a small to medium-sized town around Ireland operates. And you know, I'm in the Dublin bubble up here a little bit more. So, look, it's devastating everywhere, and not least in small towns around the country, I'm sure.
It is. It's devastating. And you can't be smug in any way, shape or form, but you can say there are certain things are great for living in the country, and that you can go for a walk. And you can bring we can go out and go and hike in one of the hills or mountains around, which is phenomenal, and a respite away from the media and the news and coronavirus and everything that's mentioned everywhere. And you can get out and look at a blue sky if it hasn't been raining, and it has been raining for most of it. And we did get out on one day, and we went to a place called the 12 o'clock Hills near Broadford. I've never been there before. It's absolutely stunning. And so that was kind of magic. And then you come back into the town and you see every pub closed. The Lakeside Hotel is closed. All the cafes are closed. There isn't a huge amount on. Rightfully so. And but you know that most of these businesses have never fully recovered from the recession. They're pretty much living by cash flow. A delay or a breakdown of a week or 2 weeks or a month or 3 months or whatever it'll be, has huge impact. Mm. And I look, it's great to hear some of the comments that came out from the government today in terms of mortgage suspension for a number of months for people who are affected by it, and a whole variety of things like that. That and more will be needed for rural Ireland. You know, we have a couple of big shops here, and they'll survive. And in fact, they'll be very busy because people need food, obviously. But for everybody else, they're just going to be under huge pressure. So we've a tough time ahead, and it's trying to do whatever you can do yourself, and try and stay safe, be safe. And I have to say, if at all possible, ring people that you don't know whether they're under pressure or not. You never know until you have a conversation with them. So I spend part of every day just ringing the phone, just picking up the phone and ringing different people that either haven't spoken in a while or I know would be under a bit of pressure or whatever. Just have a chat, a general conversation is no harm.
I was chatting with someone else earlier, and we were kind of saying in World War One, they probably had newspapers pretty much. World War Two, an address from Churchill or the King or whoever was addressing them over in the UK at the time. And today, if this is in some respects a wartime environment, the way it feels, we have 24/7 infinite bombardment. And there is definitely a bias in your brain to look for every sign of danger at all times. And there is an addictive quality to all the information coming in. How are you engaging with the news and the flow of news at the moment?
Well, you know, I'm not a social media person, so that saves me from looking at everything. So I'm not getting any of the fake news. I have no idea what's going on there. My kids are. My wife is, to a degree. I'm forever giving out to all of them for being on social media too much. But now it's the only ability to be able to keep in contact with their friends. So, you know, when you're trying to stay in your house, you still want to be able to communicate. So they're, you know, the boys are on that, which is fine. Mm. But in terms of the news, I'm trying to limit it. I wanted all the information at the start, but Jesus, some of that information is far too real to want to have every moment of every day. So what I try and do, and I've succeeded maybe one day of the last four or five, is that I've read the information in the morning, because I don't want to be thinking about this stuff at nighttime. And so it's to try and get the information in. And I think if anything seriously serious is important, I'll know it'll get to me somehow. But I'm trying not to digest it every minute of every day. So like for myself, I'm trying to do work, which it's difficult. Most of my work is it's not in Killaloo, and I'm away from an awful lot of it, but I can keep in contact. We've had board meetings over Skype and elements of that, and there's a lot of work I can do with it, and there's a lot of prep I can do for afterwards. So it's I'm as busy as I can possibly be, but I don't want to know every single element of it, because there isn't a huge amount I can do with all that information. If it's of benefit to me, fine. But actually for...
Oh, apologies. We seem to have lost Keith. We will take a very short ad break. It's Off the Ball here in the evening. We will get Keith Wood up in just one second.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now we're back, and Keith Wood's back. Hello.
Yes. Hiya, Joe. I don't know what happened there.
Me neither. I'm about to move on to the sport anyway, although at least several people here have texted in, like John, to say, surely the lad in TY is allowed go on the DOS, which I think is a fair point. You're not winning that argument with him.
No, and there's very few arguments you can win with him, actually. He's got a good grasp of logic, which he's well able to put me under pressure over, you know. So he was due to be playing the Junior Cup final, which was due to be on next week. So that obviously won't be on for a while. So he's... look, my only way to win that argument is to run him into the ground, so he'll be as fit as he possibly ever possibly be, I suppose, at the end of it. But anyway.
The implications in all of this for rugby, like in every other sector, are not clear. in totality. But let's start with the finances. I want to ask you in this in a moment about the Premiership clubs, who I would suspect are quite exposed. What about the four provinces? Where are we?
I think we're all exposed. I think it's funny. There's an argument to discuss in relation to sport that it's an irrelevance and has nothing at all. And I'd often say it's great because it means nothing. And it is great because it means nothing, because everybody has a hard job and they work their week, and this is their release at the weekend, is to watch and shout at the TV or go to a ground or whatever. And I actually think it's becoming more important in the weeks that we can see that we don't have it, because there's no release at the moment. And I think that makes sport important for that reason. You can kind of bypass that often. When I look at Ireland, I think because there's a couple of pluses. Mm. So the IRFU is in fairly decent financial shape over most of the other unions around. That's a big plus. The fact that they're in control of all the money that's generated by the game comes in through them mostly, puts them in a strong position. However, they also have to carry four teams. So if you look like England, they don't carry any of their teams. The teams are on their own. So what we would consider to be a great strength also means that the IRFU have to carry all of that over the next period of time. So, I mean, that's tough for them. So it's, you know, I still think it probably puts Ireland in a better position. They're more in control of their own destiny, and I think that puts them in a stronger position. It's hard when you can't train. I think in the absence of any information, which is what we have at the moment, so they don't know when they're going to go back training again. So they don't know where you can fit matches into the season. For me, the most important part is that Ireland get back to playing their matches, because they fund the game in Ireland. The international matches are the absolute cash cow for Irish rugby, and they're the matches that have to be played. It's like the old primacy of contract that there used to be, that the international rugby play matches have kind of first dibs. And I think that'll have to be the case, because that's where the money is made. And you can argue over different competitions or not, but actually the guys need to be paid. And this is what will guarantee it.
Yeah, so when the world begins to turn a little bit again, those outstanding Six Nations games, for instance, will probably take a priority, because it's an easy 4 or 5 million for the various unions.
I think they take priority over all the other competitions, in my view.
Yeah. And to what extent does the CVC windfall help matters?
I think it mitigates against the huge losses. Because the losses in rugby are colossal. And of course, they're nothing against the illness. And, you know, I think that goes without saying.
Sure, we're talking in that context.
Again, there's lots of livelihoods. It's not just the players. It's everybody else that sits within it. So the CVC deal, and we can agree or disagree about the deal, and maybe that's for another conversation, but it was a windfall for all the teams that play rugby pretty much in the Northern Hemisphere. So Six Nations, Pro 14, the Premiership. There was a lot of money coming in. The Premiership teams between them lost 50 million last season. So the money that's coming in there is filling a hole that is there. It isn't kind of gravy that they have on top. That hole is going to be severely exacerbated now because of this delay. And I don't know. I can't really, because we don't know what's happening, but I think it'll be very hard to fit in the end of the season. It definitely will be some hodgepodge of it for club games. There has to be. And that makes it very difficult. So I can tell you that the provinces would have been looking at the CVC money from Pro 14, and they would be saying, right, this is fantastic. This can put us into a good financial position, because no rugby team is making money as it stands at the moment. And that's prior to this crisis. So I, you know, when something like this happens, you then end up having a reappraisal of a whole variety of different elements. So what will the new rugby landscape look like? And I don't know what that's going to look like, but it needs to fit into a model where it is able to stack up financially, and it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about the Premiership clubs, and we've talked about this before, from memory, I think pretty much bar Exeter, nobody really, maybe one or two other exceptions, tops, but nobody else really is cutting their cloth and in the black at the end of each year.
No, Exeter are now, Leicester used to, Harlequins definitely were, and a lot of the reason that Harlequins were able to be okay was because of their proximity to Twickenham. They're only across the field. Right. Across the road from Twickenham, and they would do a lot of corporate hospitality and additional businesses that go with it to try and make it be a standalone business. And but it's like France and England rely incredibly heavily on sugar daddies, people who are willing to dig deep into their pockets, be it for the right reasons that they want to do something incredible for joy or for arrogant reasons or, you know, whatever reasons, you know, that people decide to buy a club. You don't buy them for financial reasons because they lose money. So whether that model then gets broken on the back of this or not, you don't know. But as it stacks, everything is reliant on television money. And we've just seen television are spending a huge amount of money on this. If they look for a reduction on the money that they spend in, that will put nearly every club over the edge.
Yeah,
bleak.
No, there's no doubt. And the amazing thing, and we're talking about this actually across the show, whenever that point is reached, it's none of us know what's in the contracts. You know, none of us know if the TV money is based on per number of games. I suspect the word pandemic is not in the majority of these contracts. One last point, just to put you on this broadly. Gordon Darcy in the Irish Times today made the point that his feeling for the Pro 14, for instance, and as strategic as we want to try and get about this, he felt, well, let's go with current standings, a final, no trophy is handed out, and then the spoils are divided up in order to maintain infrastructures. And there's talk in France of, well, cancel top 14 season and have a 15th club up next year, whoever wins promotion there. Heineken Champions Cup qualification is obviously a bit of a mess. Pro 14, I mean, there'll be no trophy handed out if you do stop things as they are. Maybe you aspire to play playoffs down the line, or maybe you just go with a flat new season. The problem for you in trying to answer this question is that I'm not giving you a starting point here for when things can get back to normal. So you don't know if you're starting here from July or if it's from November. And that is the tricky thing when we're trying to nail down logistics for how rugby will say goodbye to the season that was.
Well, I think if you have a look at this season and say that there may be a potential for having a few matches left in this season prior to the ordinary season end, let's make that as an assumption. Mm-hmm. Well, then I think you could look at the present placings. It's unfair, but nothing is fair in this situation, and maybe have playoffs at the end of it and see what happens, as opposed to playing out the remaining number of games in it. I don't know. Yeah. European Cup competition seems to really struggle to fit in anywhere else, and all the clubs in England and France in particular would say that the competition that matters most to them is their home competition. And that's where they make the most money, and that's where they can kind of recoup whatever losses that they have. But one thing that does come out of this, I think, when you look at it, was when the original Six Nations game started to be postponed or delayed, there's no slots for them to fit in. So the season is, let's be honest, it's ludicrous anyway. I don't know how many weeks are in the season. Is it 46 or 48 this year? I'm not sure. If you look at American football, it's 16 weeks regular season. Three times that in rugby. And so I don't know whether that's fully sustainable then. Yeah, because
you need about three teams per panel, don't you?
Well, you do, and I think it makes it very difficult to fit all of it in. So I didn't really like World Rugby's global season, but there's merit in it if you take off 10 or 14 weeks out of it. I think there's merit if you can have a global season then. But I don't know that it particularly fits the bill that people are traveling all over the world all the time. And for rugby matches for 48 weeks of the year, for me, that doesn't make any sense. And like that idea that you can't have another international window except until October just shows you how congested the whole season is.
Just a last one with you about 3 minutes here, 2-3 minutes before the clock gets us. We had Ian Madigan on Monday's show. He's back from 3.5 years away. He was at Bordeaux for a year and then obviously Bristol for the last 3 years. So come back to Ulster. I'm sure Billy Burns will have a thing or two to say about that and won't be handing him over his jersey. Obviously, Madigan is versatile, though he did say on Monday he's very much a 10 in his own eyes. Maybe he's coming back just to be back anyway. But also, I would presume he's looking at Sexton's age and he's looking at Joey Carberry's injury profile, and he wouldn't be crazy to think there might be a glimmer of getting involved in some Irish 23s again.
Well, I think so. I think he's in the mix. I think he's learned an awful lot from being away. I wouldn't be saying he only wants to be picked as a 10 if I was him, because he wants to be indispensable one way or the other. I think he's well able to play. I don't know that he for me, doesn't jump ahead of Johnny, not by a long stretch. Joey, no, not either. If he could be another playmaker, maybe that's fine. But I'm glad to see him back on Irish shores, because with the age profile and injury profile of our 10s, we need as many 10s as we can get. So I'm glad to see him back. I really am. Mind you, I have to say that, and I don't think Joey Carberry would thank me for this either, I would have Joey back in at 15 in a heartbeat, because I think Johnny plays better with having a full playmaker at 15. And I thought the best rugby that Johnny had played was the last season that Joey Carberry was in Leinster. I thought they actually complemented each other incredibly well. I just like to see some of the players get back from injury. You know, it's an awful shame that we don't have Joey playing.
No, so it is. And a very quick one, because I'm right up against it here. Is there any problem in your mind with Ireland, Johnny 10, Joey Carberry 15, and Joey still continues playing 10 for Munster and furthers his education that way?
For me, absolutely not. Right. I always think you should try and get your best 15 onto the field if you can.
Okay. Listen, pleasure. Thanks so much. We'll talk next week, Keith. Cheers.
Brilliant. Cheers, Joe.
Okay, that's Keith Wood. Back in one sec.